going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time to look at the Ravens' UDFA signings after the 2025 draft here. We've allowed these to percolate for a couple of days as there can be additional changes, but with rookie minicamp coming up shortly, we think this is probably the list. There are two types of signings that are done here. There are minicamp tryout signings, which are a fair number of people. I've tried to make sure that the people signed here are legitimate UDFA signings and not just tryout guys, but we'll see if I might have missed one or not. Some general trends at the top I'll talk about before I get into the individual players. The Ravens already had a developmental offensive tackle in the draft in Carson Vincent in the fourth round. Pretty high pick allocated to him. Apparently, George Warhop really banging the table for him from the video that was shown. It's just, that's good to see. I'm glad these, you know, there's someone in the Ravens organization. It's always best if it's the offensive line coach who really wants that player. But they went with two additional developmental offensive tackles that we'll get to a little later in this UDFA group that they signed. Got a large number of non-Power 4 and even small school players. Now, I personally am very happy to see that trend return to the Ravens draft. That's something under Ozzie, when Eric DaCosta, I believe, had a large responsibility for the small school scouting. They had more of these players drafted. And, of course, in the past, Matt Judon, Lardarius Webb, Zach Sealer, and we go back to Brandon Williams, Michael Pierce, are guys who came from small schools and were really good Ravens, as it turned out. So I'm glad to see them take more chances. Now, the point has been made that NIL money has changed a lot of that. We saw Carson Vincent as a guy who never got a big NIL offer. Now, he's telling the story a little differently right now. I'm reading between the lines on that. Carson Vincent says he wasn't going to move on from Alabama and A&M after these guys came back sniffing around who had rejected him the first time around. I suspect an offer was never really made, that, you know, they looked at some of his functional strength questions and they were a little bit scared off by that. If one was made, maybe it wasn't good enough for him to leave Alabama A&M and he just said, screw it, I'll stay here. That's possible. But I think he's kind of manufacturing the reason why that happened. It's kind of like someone gets fired and they say they quit, kind of thing. And you kind of wonder about it. But not to get too deep into this, Carson Vincent is obviously the guy that Warhop was banging the table for, but they've given him additional options, you know, to try and develop here. And there might be a practice squad offensive tackle out of the remaining two. Vincent's going to have to make the roster or he'll almost certainly be lost as a fourth round draft pick. And with his size and shape, characteristics and the background he's got at Alabama A&M. So anyway, these other two guys, probably a practice squad player, maybe two out of them. And we'll talk about them when we get to the tackles. There's always, as always, a kind of a local flavor, a couple guys from local schools. We'll talk about that. One of them, I can't figure out why he's here unless there's a tricksy Ravens plan for a position conversion that I think is possible. A couple of the best chances to make the roster are nose tackles. There are two guys. They both have fairly interesting stories. One comes from a big school. The other also comes from a big school, but he has a background that's extremely intriguing. We're going to get into that a little bit. The fullback prospect they have is from University of Maryland, and we'll talk about him. I think that's the case. If he's not, and they're trying to get him to play offensive line, it's a strange situation because he didn't play offensive line for Maryland very well, and he's a former defensive player. So we'll talk about that. And then there's if you look through this, this is often the case with UDFA signings, is they're very balanced, and one of the goals you're trying to do is to set your practice squad up with a player for each position group who can then step in case of injury. So it's a lot of next man up stuff. And they do want players they can develop, but that number of players is getting smaller. So they need a backup running back, possibly even two. They certainly know who the names are after they make cuts that they could add another one. And, you know, they need a wide receiver or two, and they need a couple offensive linemen, and they need a couple defensive linemen. And there is set to make that next move and activate someone as they need. Lots of possibility of activating a special teams player. Last year, it was a special teams player / third running back that got activated a number of weeks. Collier at the start, John Kelly for a period of time. And those guys they might have not gotten any carries between them. Collier might have had a couple of carries, but what they had was almost none. The Ravens basically didn't have a third running back carry, hardly any, until Mitchell came back. I think Ali had a few carries too. So we're talking about a very a set of elevations, limited to three each, where the Ravens are really taxing and turning over that practice squad during the year. I would expect the same thing to occur. Ravens are a contender. They're trying to win this year. You've got a limited number of total spots. And this is a real point I'm trying to make on your practice squad that you can use for true development purposes. If you had a real player who everyone was knew was good there, they get scarfed up. If you had another player who was the size and shape guy, they get scarfed up. If you have a player who nobody knows about, then you got a chance to keep them. And the competing factor to keeping these players on the practice squad, and that's where a lot of the best case scenario is for these UDFA guys, the competing factor are injuries occurring around the league and how that is reducing the replacement level across the National Football League and causing people to look covetously at each other's practice squads for potential signings. Now, one of the key rules about that is when you sign somebody off another team's practice squad, first of all, the usual process is that that player will come to you and say, hey, do you really want them to do this? Do you want to just elevate me to the 53 now? And that's happened with various players. I think it's happened at tight end, offensive tackle. Will Holden in the past was a guy who gave the Ravens a chance to elevate him. Might have been the right thing to do even at the time, but he was signed by Indianapolis, I think it was. So anyway, there's been times in the past that certainly occurred. Last year, they lost Vokolek to the Cardinals. But it's something that every year you kind of got to be looking over your shoulder at who might be taking off of your own practice squad and then figuring out who's the next name out there. And it would be a street level player. It wouldn't be on somebody else's practice squad who you need to then sign to your practice squad to be a potential backup. So anyway, lots of intrigue there on the fringe of the roster. So anyway, let's talk about the guys with the best chance to make the 53. Actually, why don't we just talk top to bottom about the list? I'll tell you who the best chances to make the 53 are as we go through this. We start with a very interesting and familiar name, and that's Jarrad Penning, the offensive lineman out of Northern Iowa. Played with his brother, who is, yes, Trevor Penning, the penalty magnet of Northern Iowa. He played left tackle, was a first-round pick of the Saints. I think a first-round pick, might have been an early second, of the Saints a few years back. But Penning was a guy who had over a penalty per game at the college level. His brother has a little bit of a penalty problem, but nothing like the same. He has 17 flags and 3,129 college snaps, roughly one-third the rate of his brother. So that's good to know. Now, Jarrad played guard, but they needed him to move to left tackle in his senior year. And the way that, you know, some interviews with the coach and whatnot that I've seen talk about it, he might have been more happy staying at guard. His blocking is just fine at the Northern Iowa level, which is a contextual change certainly to come to the NFL. Even an NFL camp will be a big step up for him. So we'll see. And he's 6'6", 338 is the measurements I have on him. And if I'm looking at how PFF just had him scored, which I think is about as good as anything I have to go by at this point. I've seen a little bit of highlight reel tape of him. That's all. Good pass blocker who is not a great run blocker. So it's a little bit interesting that he was a guard. He's really never been a particularly great run blocker and has only become a good pass blocker in recent years. So it might work out, might not. I think it's a long shot in the dark. I think he's a long shot, frankly, even to make the practice squad, but he is a size and shape guy, and that's why I think the Ravens have decided to take a look at him. Let's move on. The next guy is one of the big six or seven guys who has a chance to make the team or a chance to play anyway of a significant role this year, and that's Jay Higgins, the inside linebacker from Iowa. Now, he was actually in discussion on the inside linebacker top 10 countdown. And he might have been in one of our top 10s because I had him fairly high. Might have had him 11, might have had him 10, but I remember he was right there in terms of being in the top 10. A guy who ran a 4.82 40, turned 23 in February. Those are some things, obviously, that will turn off NFL teams. He had below average testing pretty much across the board except for a 7.013 cone. Of the inside linebackers, who tend to be a younger group along with running backs, and corners are very mixed, but along with running backs, I would say he was one of the real older players at 23 years old. Now, here's what's surprising. His coverage statistics were really outstanding despite the 4.82 40, 5.5 yards per target in 2024, 5.39 for his career, and a 57.2 opposition passer rating. And that's just as you would think of it. A quarterback that throws for that kind of rating is not going to have a job for very long. He had four interceptions and one touchdown last year. Some of that, you know, fits with three cone as far as short area quickness goes. But the truth of the matter is, I don't think that it's obvious. I think he has. I don't think that a three cone alone would allow him to make that kind of impact on the passing game. I think what it is he really has a good ability to read the quarterback and step into the lanes that's greater than his speed in terms of influencing throws. And it may also be that Iowa's team defense as a whole is putting him in an advantageous position. But he was definitely the below average speed will hamper him as a pro. The below average length that he has, and he's a 31 inches, will make stacking and shedding difficult. So it looks like he's a core special teams player for the Ravens, could grow into a three down will role. And he could be used as a platoon inside linebacker now, perhaps as part of a three-man team that includes a dime. Now, why do I say a three-man team? Well, because I don't think he's the ideal guy to have on the field for first down. He might be a better guy to have on the field on second and eight, second and nine, second and 10, if you don't want to have a dime back on the field and risk the possibility of a first down occurring, you not being able to change personnel and whatnot, which, by the way, I think defensive coordinators probably fear to a much greater extent than it actually comes into play. That is an often stated reason why they don't go to dime defense, is that they really don't want to be caught with their pants down and a light unit on the field on first down if the team converts and immediately wants to run a play. So since I don't think that's that big a deal, I'd point back to the era of Danelle Ellerbe. So they had McLean, Danelle Ellerbe, and a dimeback playing. That's a three-man platoon. I think that sort of thing is possible for the Ravens. It's one of the nice things about doing that is that it gives some additional people some snaps at the will position, gives you a chance to look at some more people, gets you a chance to see if you have real specialization value. And I'm just not sure that Higgins will hold up in the NFL the way he did at Iowa, with extremely good and kind of anomalistic pass coverage statistics. So he's good metrics, and I'm just not convinced that he can continue that at the next level. But he has a pretty good chance to make the team. I think he'd be team captain at Iowa, the unquestioned leader of a good Iowa defense. You know, if you look at any kind of video of the Iowa defense, he moves people around pre-snap. There's a lot going on there. And Higgins would be a guy who you know, certainly if he picks up the special teams aspect and is good there, and he's a little shy on speed to play special teams, by the way, but you don't have to be perfect in every respect. So if he particularly if it's kickoff coverage, which you're trying to be more impactful with this year, he's going to have a relatively short distance to run. So I think he could help the Ravens there. Maybe he's a guy who gets elevated on a weekly basis for several weeks. Maybe he's a guy who actually makes the roster, because the Ravens are very short at the end of the roster. They've got Jake Hummel and the two starters right now, and then they've got Teddy Buchanan as a fourth. They might want a fifth active on a regular game. They might also just go with four, but Higgins as a backup linebacker and a special teams player, I think, is somewhat intriguing. I think he is one of the guys from the UDFA group that has a chance to make the roster. Okay, we move on to one of the most interesting players in the group, and that's Isaac Bunyan of Maryland. Now, I don't know exactly what's going on with Mr. Bunyan and his situation. I do know he was not a good player for Maryland this last year. Now, his background is a strange one. For 2021 to 23, he was a defensive player, a nose tackle, and he accumulated 500 total snaps as a nose. I wouldn't say he was terrible, but I also wouldn't say in any way did he put himself out there as an NFL prospect at nose tackle. So he moves to guard in 2024 and plays offense. Let me get to that for a minute. And I want to report this as PFF has it, because it's just strange as hell. So on offense, He had an absolutely terrible pass blocking season, a 27.5 PFF rating there. He also had a 49.3 run blocking rating, which doesn't really speak to what I'm about to suggest here. The Ravens have to have some sort of conversion in mind. And I guess there are three possible. Number one is he could go back to defense. And I guess that's conceivable. The Ravens need nose tackles. Maybe they thought Bunyan was the right size for it. He's 6'3", 321, so he kind of is the right size to play nose. They may have decided, hey, you know, we like his size and shape characteristics. There's something about what we saw in him as a nose tackle that we think we can expand on. It's conceivable, okay? Number two is they want to convert him into a long snapper. Now, I don't think that's likely, but I just can't think of too many options in terms of what it might be otherwise. So does that make sense? Probably not. You know, your long snapper should be able to run a little bit, get downfield to cover punts, for example. Your long snapper is not the blocking position that it was in past years in the NFL where you could basically abuse the long snapper. Now you really can't do that. And I don't really think that's what they're searching for. And then the third thing, which I think makes probably the most sense, given it's the Baltimore Ravens, is that they're looking at Isaac Bunyan as a potential fullback replacement for Patrick Ricard in 2026. And so we'll go to camp. We'll see him. It'll be interesting to see, you know, whether he's dressed up in a white or a purple jersey. Frankly, I mean, what number does he wear? That's another interesting one because he probably will be wearing an eligible receiver number like 42 that Patrick Ricard wears if he's going to be used as a fullback. He doesn't have to technically. He just has to report in eligible on all the snaps. So we'll see. We'll see how they use him in camp. But that's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting it to be the unexpected because I look at this record as a pass blocker and ain't no way he's making it as a guard. Could possibly be moving back to nose tackles. Anyway, Isaac Bunyan, I'm going to be looking at him in camp and really seeing, you know, what are they trying to do with him? All right. We got the edge from Towson. I'm just going to say Fortebo. I don't know if that's the actual pronunciation for it or not. 6'3", 2 1/4, built like a wide receiver, a big, hefty wide receiver, but a wide receiver nonetheless. He's an edge defender who played 1 year at Virginia Lynchburg in 2022. Then one more in Towson at 2024 before Virginia Lynchburg. Actually, I might have played 2 years at Virginia Lynchburg. I may have that wrong. He attended Alderson Broaddus University in 2021. So he's been in college anyway for at least 4 years. He did sit out 2023 due to transfer rules. So that's explained at least. But he came back and he had a good year as a pass rusher in 2024. Another guy with local flavor to him like Bunyan. 10.3 pass rush productivity rate, which is pretty good, which was 17th, in fact, of 408 pass rushers with 200 plus pass rush snaps. That's in the 96th percentile per PFF. His finish rate actually is pretty good too, at 36.1% in the 58th percentile. There's no other athletic testing info I have on the guy. Definitely one of the players I want to watch in camp. One of the big things is going to be how much weight is he carrying? Because obviously it's 6'3", 225. He's too small to be an edge rusher in the NFL, but the Ravens may have a plan for him. And this may be someone who Chuck Smith really likes characteristics of and said, you know what, if you can just give me one guy out of this process, give me Fortebo and I'll work with him and see what we can get. And I'm sure I'm butchering the pronunciation of that name. Didn't have time to look all these up as I was putting this together. Next player is Jamal Banks, the wide receiver from Nebraska. Very classic Derek Boston, I think it is. Size wide receiver at 6'4", 220, 24 in October. Played 4 years at Wake Forest, 1 year then to finish his career at Nebraska. He's an X receiver. He catches the football pretty well with a 2.6 career drop rate. And he's been good on contested balls at 55.2%. But here's what's bad. Those contested balls are 29% of his targets. And that's telling me there's a guy who doesn't get a lot of separation on his own. And the other thing that's not good about a receiver who's primarily a deep threat is that he has just 5 missed tackles forced on 151 career receptions and only 2.1 yak per reception. Now, if you get behind the defense once in a while, you're going to take it the last 30 yards and score yourself, or you should. But that really held the 2.1 yak per reception held down his yards per target, which were only 8.5. The passer rating thrown to him, however, was 105 career, which I can say confidently, beat the spread of the QBs throwing to him at Nebraska and at Wake as well. Now, Wake's had, they might have had somebody who was throwing the ball pretty well during that time, but they did nothing. Those teams, no way in hell did they have an aggregate 105 quarterback rating over that period. Cam Ward, for example, or actually Shedeur Sanders is what I know for sure, had a 115 quarterback rating last year. And the Nebraska quarterback in particular is nowhere near there. I don't think the Wake quarterbacks were either. So Jamal Banks, classic size. That's a theme you will see the Ravens repeat over and over again. I look at the camp roster every time. They hand us a new sheet every day so we can mark off who's present at practice. And you'll notice that they really like their receivers 6 feet and up. And they want guys, they value length the same way they do really at the corner position. So you'll see the Ravens have collect aircraft carrier corners, and the slot guys, they really have to fight for an opportunity with the Ravens. In their current situation, they're really in the process of collecting outside corners, which they're Kone and Longerbeam both are. Because I don't really believe, I think they'll try and address their slot corner situation with some combination of Ardarius Washington, Humphrey, and Hamilton. So I don't think they're really looking for additional players to play the slot. All right, let's move on. Marquise Robinson, a cornerback from Arkansas. I don't have a lot of information on him. He's 6'1", 192. I don't have an age, but he did play a year of JUCO ball, 2 years at South Alabama, and then 1 year at Arkansas. So he's probably either 22 or 23. 8.6 yards per target in the SEC with a 108 quarterback rating and a 1 every 79 penalty rate, which is quite high. There's nothing, I mean, he's playing in the SEC. Good. I'm glad Arkansas liked him, but I there's nothing in that screams out he's going to make the team. He might be a guy you keep around. I think a lot of these guys, a secondary thing you get is you look at a guy in camp and then he's a guy you can call back if your depth really starts to unravel. We've seen that happen through the Ravens in past years where they've lost two or three or four cornerbacks in the same year. And all of a sudden, they're patching together whoever they can. And Willie Gaston is coming in off the street. And, who's the guy's name began with an O who would keep coming back to the Ravens. I want to say it was like Overbay or something, but I don't think that's right. I can't remember. But anyway, they're calling a lot of names that they're already familiar with in the building. So they liked something maybe from the interview, maybe from the coaches speaking with Marquise Robinson at the time. They probably think he's coachable. They think they can bring him in here in an emergency, fit him to the scheme. I would not think he's any kind of chance to make the team coming out of camp. He might be a chance to make the practice squad. That's possible, although I think that opportunity is going to be crowded. And I think the next level down is Marquise Robinson is a guy you call back for a job a little later. And you say, hey, wait a minute, we got an opening on the practice squad now. We'd like you to be next man up for us. Can you come back to Baltimore? All right, let's move on. Daiwan Black, the edge from Temple, is next. 6'3", 2'4".
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis. So you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies. And let me tell you, it takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, their Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
He ran a 488, so he's about the slowest edge you'll ever see. 18 bench reps is not impressive. Obviously, a 10-foot, 6-inch broad jump was outstanding. But he's got a big tackling problem career, 25.4% missed tackle rate career. He missed the first four games of this last season for, I use the same quotations that were used in the article I saw it in, undisclosed reasons. So I'm not sure what that was. I don't know if it's academic, I had a team rules. I don't know if it was academic policy. I have no idea. No idea what the reason was, but not good to have that on the background there. And hopefully, if there were maturity issues there, he's past them. He has some solid pass rush juice in terms of finish rate, and he has 65 career PFF pressures, as they define them, at 342 pass rush snaps. You know, that's something. The 43% finish rate is pretty good. There just isn't anything here that would scream out to me that this guy's ideal. And he's also a guy who at 488 is not going to be a guy you drop into coverage. So if he had Sam linebacker chops, he'd have a much better chance to make the practice squad. Right now, I think he's probably a camp body. I think he gets a significant portion of the second half of the first exhibition game, first preseason game, let's call it by the modern terminology. And he might play a good amount in the third game as well. I don't see him as a guy who is going to make the team, but even is going to make the practice squad. So I think they've got other choices that they would go with. Again, could be a case where Chuck Smith saw something about this guy that he liked, and he banged the table for him, and the Ravens, you know, go ahead and obliged him with a guy that they like as well. Moving on to the next player we've got is Xavier Gilroy, who is the wide receiver from Arizona State. 6'2", 200. Sound familiar in terms of build there. Played 3 years at Idaho State and then 2 years at Arizona State. I do not have an age on the guy. Again, nice whitewashing Mr. Gilroy's agent, but he would be either 23 or 24 years old with that kind of a background. Had a good year last year with 127.1 passer rating throwing to him. And that is in contrast to the fact that his yak per reception was a fairly low 3.7. That's below the line. I forgot what the average is. It's around four and change. Maybe it be right, even five among the receivers who had 50 targets. But still averaged 8.9 yards per target in 2024. So, definitely not in the elite wide receiver category. However, everybody who's being signed to a practice squad has more warts than not among the characteristics you want at the position. And they're most of the time they're being brought in for one or two things that the team really likes about them, or in general that they're a guy that's just off the list. And the guys who are just off the list to be drafted, they cost you money. So you have to spend a significant portion of your pool to get a player like that, of your UDFA dollars pool. I don't think Dywan Black is a guy they had to give money to in terms of that. I don't think Xavier Gilroy was a guy they had to give a lot of money to. I could be wrong, but my guess would be $5,000 or less on these guys, or whatever the minimum is. Is where they would be near to. Has a terrible contested catch rate career. With 17 of 44, and terrible, that's probably a little bit of an overstatement, a below average contested catch rate for his career. Again, fits the Ravens mold of the wide receivers that are 6'1 and up and have good size. So they're looking for size, they're looking for backup X. And the way the Ravens have solved that problem the last couple of years is by having veterans they brought in. I mean, we have camp darlings every year. Oh my God, this guy's catching the ball so well. And, he's going to be the guy. Dayton Wade really looked like a guy who should have gotten a chance last year at some point. And they gave it to everybody else under creation here, Sims and Miller and Kirkwood and all these other guys, these veteran players who are just hanging around. And for whatever reason, that's what the Ravens seem to have stuck with in the last few years. I kind of have been a little bit bothered by their love of older veteran players. We'll call it the 27 to 31, 32-year-old even wide receivers that they keep around in a stable and they bring on. But last year, I wouldn't say it failed them. Sims made a couple plays. Miller made a couple plays. Neither of them was great. And the guy they brought in who was supposed to be better, and they actually traded something for him, Deontay Johnson, was unbelievably bad. He's the worst wide receiver they had the whole year. So would Dayton Wade have made the difference? Would he have been a better player than Deontay Johnson? Probably, because Deontay Johnson was terrible. But they took their shot, tried to get a punt returner out of the deal, and it just didn't happen to work out. All right, let's move on. Next guy on the list is Marcus Major, a running back from Minnesota, 6 feet, 213, 461, 40. He played 5 years at Oklahoma, and then one more at Minnesota. So a 6-year college veteran. Loving that college life, obviously. Can't say I blame him. I loved it too, and was in school for a similar amount of time. But 24 or 25 years old for Marcus Major is, for running back, I don't see a second contract in his future. Let's put it that way. His athletic testing, other than the 461, is poor. It included 10 bench reps. He does have limited tread wear, which I'm not sure is a good thing for him, that he only has 315 college touches over 6 seasons. I'd actually probably like to have seen him utilize a little more and have a little bit more to really review. 78 career special team snaps. The Ravens rolled through a number of RB3s last year, as I kind of mentioned earlier on the show, Collier and Kelly and some guys that Ali even really was no more than an RB3 as it turned out. But the first two guys, they were called up 3 times and then released. So they were bodies to fill out the special teams unit, be the third running back while the Ravens waited for Keaton Mitchell to be ready to play. I wouldn't rule that out as happening at some point during the year, depending on what the injury, how the Ravens depth holds out. So anyway, Marcus Major, another body. He's a fairly big back and definitely gives you something in terms of as a runner, but is not a, there's no measurable, there's no component of his college career or whatnot that says this guy's definitely going to work out. Next guy is Keandre Jackson, the safety from Illinois State. Now, he's a very big safety. I saw him at one point reported that he was 6'3", 215. I think the truth is closer to 6'1", 215. That's what I got from one of the sources that I trust. Has 518 career special teams snaps. Those have come across five units, including the field block unit, plus the kick and punt both ways. So there's a guy who can help you on special teams. And he could very well be an elevation at some point during the season, a guy that I think fits the mold of a typical player, can give you maybe a little bit of defensive help. But my guess is, based on this next thing, they do not really trust this guy to jump right in on the back end at safety. So he's more like a Sanusi Kane clone who might come up to the team if you happen to need him. 8.9 yards per target, 11.3 career passer rating against him. He did have an outstanding coverage grade nonetheless via PFF. Take that as you will. I never like to see a high yards per target. By the way, here's one of the problems with PFF, and this is an issue with Starks as well, is that if anything, PFF is being kind to Starks and Keandre Jackson because they charge fewer targets to the safety and more to the inside linebacker that are between level 2 and 3. And if you look at another source like Pro Football Reference, they charge many more to the safety once it gets over the linebacker's head. So safeties tend to benefit by the PFF accounting. And for example, the best one I can come up with is that Jackson, in his 4 years with the Bears prior to coming to the Ravens last year, had 100 PFF coverage snaps. He had 144 PFR coverage snaps. That's a big difference in terms of assigning accountability. But he also had a 10.0 yards per target from PFF and 10.44, I believe it was, from I think it was 10. No, maybe 10.4. Might have been 10.5 even from PFR. So it was a high, more targets and a higher yards per target on those throws. All right. So he has played roughly 40% of his snaps on the back end. That's in 2024. So it's not like he has no experience. He just doesn't have any real success at the thing. And remember, he's playing at Illinois State. So this is a jump and a half to move up. But he wasn't, or actually a double jump. He's an honorable mention, AP FCS All-American. So the people who make those awards thought, yep, Keandre Johnson is a hell of a football player and might have a chance at the next level. All right, let's move on to Sam Pitts. Again, we're going to Illinois State. We go to Sam Pitts, who's a tight end at Minnesota Duluth. Tall and lean guy, not massively muscular in any sense at 6'6", 243, ran a 4.75 40, and he has almost 33-inch arms, which is nice. That's a good catch radius that he can present to his quarterback. He was a team captain, the Division II All-American, and a two-time conference academic All-American as well. I know the Ravens like that. They've got some guys, certainly, that fit that mold, and I think when they see one, they probably think, this is a guy who can learn our system and we can teach him how to do this. They're in no danger anytime soon of losing Sam Pitts from their practice squad. They didn't bring in another tight end of any sort. So my guess is Sam Pitts is by default going to make the practice squad for the Baltimore Ravens to start the season. I would not expect anything else. And are the Ravens likely to add another tight end? It could happen, but they can't really sign a guy to a veteran contract and give him guaranteed money. They can only sign a guy to a veteran contract, or basically sign him for what amounts to a camp tryout that they will then decide at the end of that whether he or Pitts is the guy they want to gamble on for the regular season at the top of their practice squad. I guess it's still possible Mark Andrews could be traded. I think it became a lot less likely now that there's no meaningful 2025 draft compensation, I should say. So yes, if he plays out this year, goes to free agency, and same thing with likely, whatever they get in terms of draft compensation will be in 2027. Won't be determined until after their quality of play is determined from the 2026 season, what those draft picks are worth. But potentially both of them could be signed, and you really hope the Ravens would be able to sign one of them and be able to at least keep the tight end group together. Charlie Kohler, also a free agent. Patrick Ricard, also a free agent. So the Ravens have some planning to do. And in a way, it's a little surprising that Sam Pitts is all they have done to address tight end going into this season. You think, you know, so they're a year away from Armageddon at the tight end position, and they really need to have to very quickly figure out how to fill out the roster. Ain't going to be an easy thing. They might have to overexpend in terms of cap dollars, whether that's signing their own or signing somebody else's. It might mess up some of the comp pick offsets they have if they go outside the organization to sign someone. So however you cut it, it's going to be a stressed position after the 2025 season. And I know everybody only cares about winning now, winning now, winning now, but you got to win. You got to care about winning in 26 and 27 as well. And guess what? Lamar Jackson's going to be here for those years and be really nice for have the window stay open that entire time and not hamper ourselves with contracts and other roster clogging that can't be fixed during that time. All right. Now we move on to one of the, I think, the most interesting prospect that the Ravens have brought in for their UDFAs, and that's Nash Hutmaker, the defensive tackle from Nebraska. Really a nose tackle. He wears number zero. They just opened up apparently number zero at Nebraska, and his teammates, Nebraska anyway, maybe other places too, they vote on who gets to wear these single digit numbers. And, you know, 1 through 9 were assigned for both offense and defense, but zero hadn't been assigned. And they voted it to him, and he wore that. He's a nose tackle slash DT, 6'4", 310. So think Kelly Gregg in terms of size. Kelly Gregg is actually shorter than that, weighed about the same. He'll be 24 in May. So he spent 4 years at Nebraska. I think he redshirted as well, because otherwise there's kind of a lost year there. I do not believe he played any JUCO ball. He had 12 defensive stops last year, had just 2 missed tackles in 2024. And 42-11 career, which is okay. That's maybe just a smidge below the line of what I would hope for from a defensive lineman, but it's not bad. It's 3.9-1. Now here's where it gets really interesting. He has a wrestling background. Now, first of all, my eyes light up whenever I see that for any defensive lineman, because I know that player is going to have a much better ability to exert leverage on his opponent than what you might otherwise guess from his measurables. So Hutmaker clearly fits that bill, and to an extreme degree. So I've watched a video of, you know, it's kind of a him growing up video, and it's got his parents on there too. And his parents are first talking about, you know, the wrestling coach came and wanted him to wrestle when he was in the 8th grade. And by the way, I don't think that's that uncommon. You pick up some guys in the lower weight classes. You might get a few forfeits. Sometimes you have a guy who's actually advanced enough that they can wrestle at that age. And oftentimes the guys, you know, they end up being a 4-year champion at a low weight class beginning in 9th grade, if they can maintain that weight, or if they're, you know, they're basically finished growing at that point. And it tends to be a really small guy is has big advantages as they mature in those lower weight classes. That was not the case with Hutmaker. Hutmaker came in and was a heavyweight as an 8th grader, not just any heavyweight. He grew up in South Dakota. By the way, looking at his parents, his mother is kind of big. His father is absolutely enormous. He looks like he was born at Sturgis. And he's got enormous guns, and he, If nobody got him to play football at some point, they missed out on one of the best players that would have been locally anywhere in South Dakota anyway. And so, you know, they're very nice people, it seems like, and they certainly were on camera, let's put it that way. And they, you know, they were asked about having him wrestle in 8th grade. He goes, well, I don't know, he might get hurt and whatnot. You see his father is, you know, is like either a weightlifter or a bodybuilder or something. I mean, he's just enormous. And I'm like, you really had that fear for your son at this point. And they've got pictures of him there and whatnot. Anyway, 8th grade as a heavyweight, he went all the way to the state finals in South Dakota and lost. Okay. That to me is unbelievable. In his high school career, 4 years undefeated, and he finished number one nationally among heavyweights as a senior. That's a pretty freaking dominant time. 72 consecutive pins he had at one point. And this was one of the great things. His coach was on, his wrestling coach was on. He talked about this a little bit. And he said that in winning the state wrestling tournament, I believe this was in his senior year, it makes sense, he spent less than 2 minutes total on the mat. So think about that. I don't know anything about wrestling, but I do know you have like 3 2-minute periods, maybe it's 3 3-minute periods. So you might wrestle for as long as 9 minutes in one match, and maybe it's only six even, but I think it's 3 times 3. And so if let's say there were 16 or 32 people in the South Carolina tournament, let's say it's 32, then he's got to win 5 matches to get there, right? Less than 2 minutes in total. That's 120 seconds, means he was getting a pin in 24 seconds on average or less to win all these tournaments. Certainly didn't go the distance in any of them. He had to get pins in all five, in all however many matches he played. It was all pins. So anyway, a fantastic wrestling background is very apparent. He was also the state champion in both the shot put and the discus, and the South Dakota High School Athlete of the Year. Small state, don't care. That's still a big time award. He's voted by his teammates. Like I said, it's weird number zero. I think you think about Kelly Gregg with this. He's got some real pass rushing juice, by the way. His junior year at Nebraska, he had a decent sack total and was disruptive. He's in the backfield. You look at him, he's a mountain to handle. He's not a super big defensive lineman. I say he's just normally sized. But he's constantly penetrating, and he's just big barrel chested guy, very hard to handle. You can see how the offensive linemen, particularly the ones that, were playing against him that I saw, just couldn't stand in front of him. And they try to double team him. And that in some ways that just makes the situation worse. He's the kind of nose tackle I think would be fantastic for an under on stunts from what I could see on tape. And I would guess, and I have no idea what the guy's length is, and I'm not sure I really give a crap given how amazing he's been in terms of his wrestling career. I think he will do whatever is necessary as a hand fighter to gain the leverage he needs, deny space very effectively. And the thing that is a consistent characteristic among wrestling guys is they end up being tremendously productive tacklers. So they're not your typical two-gap deny space guys. They all want to penetrate. They want to bifurcate the backfield. They want to get in there, force a running back into a bad choice, make a tackle a good percentage of the time. And he didn't have a whole bunch of missed tackles, period, but two in his senior year. But certainly a guy who could be a nose tackle that will be with the Ravens for a while. I think he is the most interesting and probably the most likely to make the Ravens out of the group, even though he's got a competitor at nose tackle within this UDFA group. But of the UDFAs, Hutmaker would be my bet as the most likely to make the team. Ravens have a need there. They're effectively having a two-man camp competition between him and Jason Jones of Auburn, who is certainly stood up to SEC competition. He's 6'6", 3¼". We'll get to him a little later. But Hutmaker would be my bet to win that because I think he does a lot more with less on the field. Nickname is the Polar Bear. So that's a good nickname for a defensive lineman. You'd want that. All right, let's move on. How many do I have left to do here? I think we have to break this into two shows here. So I'll call the first episode here. I want to thank everybody for listening, for starters. Great loyalty, especially during the draft. I've been seeing some of the comments and really appreciating them, help people be directed towards this draft show in the next year. I thought the panel was fantastic this year. Matt Ruff, I really want to thank for being a point guard and distributing the football very effectively for most of the draft. You're asking people questions, trying to get people involved. I thought was fantastic. I didn't really ask him to do that, and he just knew to do it anyway. And that's great. Thank you, Matt. Thank you very much. And he's done a great job on Friday Morning GM as a fill-in for Voss. As well, we had great other people. Jake Vogel. I mean, I don't want to name all the names because I'll forget one or two, and then that will seem like I'm ungrateful. But we had fantastic panelists for all 3 days. We're going to try and get all of that posted so you get our organic responses to the draft as it happens. So you'll see maybe somewhat upset about the Malachi Starks pick and elated over the Mike Green pick. That'll both be out there for everybody's point of reference. By the way, that's something I think people want to overstate how upset I am about the Malachi Starks pick. Let me tell you that if I knew that they were drafting Green and Starks with their first two picks, and I didn't know the order, I'd be over the moon. And I would assume that it would be Green then Starks probably. But I'd have trouble believing how either one of them could last to 59, because Starks would have been tremendous value at 59 and Green would have been a tremendous value at 27. I just think Starks was probably not quite the value I would have liked at 27. And so it does beg the question of, is it forgivable, you know, that they really then went out and took a chance on Green appropriate. And it's really only a, you know, whatever they believe about their own due diligence, whether or not it's good enough. And they, if they believe it, and if Mike Green can be the player and the citizen we hope he'll be, it's going to be an unbelievable draft pick that is way more gain in value than the relatively small amount that Starks was an overdraft in my mind. And again, hopefully the national pundits are right, because every single one of them disagrees with me on Starks. They think, hey, great player, does it all, blah, blah, blah. Great. I really hope you're right. I hope a year from now I'm buying a Malachi Starks jersey, and I hope 19 years from now I'm going to his Hall of Fame induction. So I really also hope that I'm going to Mike Green's Hall of Fame induction somewhere in that same vicinity too, because he looks like a real player. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.